This is Audible.
Harper Perennial and Harper Audio present Any Man, a novel by Amber Tamblyn. That's me. Performed by John Roberts, Russ Tamblyn, Ben Foster, Mark Maron, Jason Ritter, Glenn Davis, January Lavoie, Therese Plummer, Phoebe Stroll, Robin Miles, Dan Bittner, Michael Crouch, and James Foey. And me, Amber Tamblyn.
Part 1. 1. Am I in a body? Nobody answers. The sound of swallowing. A liquid click. I feel a tongue, or a tongue is felt. It is my tongue, or it is a tongue, belonging to someone else. I am someone else. Or I am the tongue, belonging to a self. I am not a self. I ask the tongue that is me, or the tongue that is in a mouth, to count. How many teeth are left? It doesn't want to. Please. The tongue lifts its twisted torso from the tonsils, thrown to the back of the throat like a child from a car's crash. Darkness is a body. I am in a darkness. Or I am in a body. A body is darkness. The tongue searches, feels the teeth tremble like an ensemble of pebbles disassembled. They are almost all accounted for. The tongue digs through an opening, touching air, past lips, my lips, maybe. The tongue feels skin on a face. What is feel? Nobody answers. I open my eyes. The sky is a blue cheese white with bullet holes of lapis, hewed by the night's dethroning. A bird the size of the memory of a bird passes over like a spider falling perpendicularly. Someone shaped the clouds all wrong. Splash chum on the deck of dawn. Everything points away from itself. The abandoned skulls of nests rest in a nearby tree. A woman approaches and stares down at me. Her expression, horror's portrait. Can she see me? Can I be seen? Am I in a body? She uncurls a thick scarf from her shoulders and lays it across me. Is it winter? There are no leaves on the trees. Is it cold out? What is feel? The scarf's warmth is proof. Proof of pumped blood, of living. My living. I am alive. In a body. A trigger pulls and a seismic ache awakens. A searing pain rises as the sun does, assured of its scorch. Every inch of me shakes. She takes out a phone and dials quickly. I laugh. The end of me tickles. He looks, oh God, please get here quick. I am not dead. I am not dead. I am in a body, on a ground, and it is morning. It is winter. Or I am winter. I am alive at the behest of death's dress rehearsal. The pain, please, my bones break each other within internal ash. I move my jaw and it screams. Flex my toes and they scream. Tighten my anus, a scream. Swallow, a scream. My legs are spread, screams. I breathe. He's here in an alley outside the Green Tavern. And the freezing air screams. Each rib expands and lets out a scream. I try not to breathe, which makes my heart scream. I take smaller screaming breaths instead. My sore neck screams as I try to lift it, making my back scream. My entire body unfolds. The space between my hips does not scream. Silence. I reach a hand down to feel. My hand feels at what it's feeling, feels nothing. Yes, he's still breathing. Yes, I am still breathing. No, I am not living. Yes, I can feel my legs. No, I cannot feel my genitals. Yes, I can see. No, I don't want to look. Yes, Barack Obama. March, I think, early March, 2016. Three Fingers. Donald Ellis. Watertown, New York. Yes, 47 years old. Yes, an MFA in creative writing. A poet. No, I don't write anymore. Yes, I teach kids. No, I didn't mean to go to the bathroom while lying here. No, I don't want to hang on. Yes, I understand. I will survive this. No, I don't remember a face. No, I don't know how this happened. No, I don't want to cry. Yes, I had some drinks. Yes, I can still feel my legs. No, I still can't feel my genitals. Yes, I can see the church from the ambulance window. No, I never lost anything in the ocean. No, I don't know what time the cemetery closes. No, there was not enough room when we were kids. No, it wasn't my mother's fault. Yes, I feel alone. Yes, I believe in God. No, I do not want to pray. Yes, I did see a ghost once when I was 10. No, I can't remember the words to any songs right now. Yes, everything is on fire. No, I don't want you to put it out. Yes, everyone's face is a blur. No, I won't be hungry again. Yes, I'm done with eating for the rest of my life. Yes, I think the driver's humming something my grandmother used to. No, she didn't tell me. Yes, I think that's her in the car driving behind us. No, she passed away years ago. Yes, I understand I've lost blood. Yes, I understand you may not be able to save it. No. Please don't give me the details. No, I don't want to talk to the press. No, I have no comment. Yes, I understand I'm going to be fine. No, I do not want to wake up after the surgery. Yes, I'm still breathing. No, I'm no longer livable. Yes, I am a school teacher. Yes, second grade. Yes, I'm married. Camilla, 15 years. No, please don't call her. Don't tell her. No, I don't want her to see me like this. Yes, to Amanda and Jake. 10 and 7. Yes, I do. Very much. Yes, I would like to cry now. Yes, I understand. Yes, I am scared. Yes, I can still feel the pain. No, please don't tell anyone. No, I'm not ready. Camilla sits next to my hospital bed, stained with the evening's abrupt catastrophe, half her black hair falling out of a hasty pre-dawn bun, her shirt on backwards and inside out. She's been up for 2 days straight since they called and told her some woman found me lying in an alley. She tells me I was in surgery for several hours while they tried to save it, attempted to reconstruct it, get blood moving through it, figure out a way, with newer medical technology, plastic surgery even, to graft skin and salvage it. Even if I might never be able to fully use it again, it would be there in some way, nostalgia's souvenir. She tucks the curtains of her long bangs behind her ears and allows grief to take center stage. They were mostly unsuccessful, she says. We sank to the bottom of each other's oceans, drowning in shared silence. There are no pamphlets for this, no leaflets we can look through together about how to deal or move forward. Her green eyes pucker saltwater as she tells me it doesn't matter to her, that she'll love me no matter. I want to reach out and kiss her lids, run my thumbs over their creaminess, and remember what delicate feels like. She holds my hand and says, "The local paper called me an area man." She wants to know if I can believe that, like I don't have a name or something. When Camilla gets angry, her shoulders move back and forth as she speaks, like spreading wings. I've always loved this about her. Sometimes I grab her by them and say, "Don't take off, hothead." The kids are with her mother. She thought it would be better to come alone so we could talk. There's a detective, Warlock, who wants to speak to me about the sexual assault when I get home from the hospital. Sexual assault, my brain repeats to my heart. She unclenches her brow and kisses my palms, waiting for my response. A little part of me peels off and jumps out the seventh-story window. Besides the obvious, I've been treated for hypothermia, abrasions, and a little blood loss. They found high levels of rohypnol in my system, she tells me. Is there anything I can remember regardless? Rohypnol. Heart. Rohypnol. I tell her I remember a storm of moths fighting for a streetlight's attention. I remember the sound of a nightbird not yet ready to quit. I tell her I remember a knee pushing against my throat, hairless, smooth. I remember a strawberry color moving electric overhead, a pink cloak dancing across my face. I do not tell her what else is remembered. Someone caressing the lobe of my ear with their tongue. A hand unbuckling my belt. The last hard-on I'd ever feel. Trying to stop it, and trying to stop stopping it. Rides of swinging nausea leaning in and out of my roller coaster body. Guilt pulsing through every pore of my departing consciousness. I do not tell her that I tried to stop it because I can't remember if I did. I do not tell her what the person looked like because I'm unsure. I do not say I enjoyed it because I don't know if that's possible given what's happened, but if I did, she would leave me. I do not ask if she's going to. I would understand if she did. I want to pull my hand away from hers and never be touched again. I want to take off all my fingers like pen caps and write blood all over this room. I want her to loathe the man who could let this happen to himself, to have no pity, to tell me this is what I deserve. Her touch is a broken mirror in every room of my mind. Her touch is a tender, mistaken fool. I want to unscrew the entire arm she's got her hand on and just give it to her. Let her have just that. My good, straight fingers, my thick pads, my forearms, and sturdy wrists, unharmed. I want her to take the arm home and make it breakfast in the morning. Let the arm tie Amanda's shoelaces while she finishes packing Jake's lunch. Give her the car keys and let it drive everyone to school. I want her to send a dirty text during lunch breaks, make her smile and think only of gloves, daydreaming about manicures. I want her to crawl into bed next to it and stroke its elbow, run her fingers over its cuticles. I want her to turn out the light and kiss the mouth of lines in its palm, happy and easy, sleep there beside it, its wrist spooning her, its heavy, steady thumb draped over her ribs. The rest of me will exit our picture's future. I'll go somewhere warm, black, waterless, touching nothing, until she forgets my name.
Hi, baby, it's me. It's about 6:30, and I'm done with the staff meeting. I swear Principal Sanders let out the most heinous, unchristly fart during the budget cut meeting today. I was sitting right next to him, and I couldn't say a word. I had to watch him shovel a tray full of room temp Gouda into his mouth for 2 hours while that fart wrapped itself around me like, God, it was awful. Listen, I'm going to meet Mark for a couple beers at the Green Tavern and maybe a bite since the kids are doing that sleepover thing, and I know you'll be out late at the baby shower thing, right? I just said thing twice. Anyway, tell Jessica I say hi. Call me back if any of that's a problem. Also, I can pick them up in the morning if you want to sleep in. The kids. Maybe I'll get some of those breakfast burrito thingies you always get. Are those from Joe's Cafe? Is Jake still doing the vegetarian thing? Okay, Jesus, the message is way too long. We can figure it out in the morning. Honey, why did you marry me? I talk a lot. Love you. Bye.
My name's Detective Warlock, but you can call me Miles, okay? Would you like your wife to join us, Mr. Ellis? I'm going to have to ask you some tough questions, so, you know, if any time you want to stop, just let me know, and we will, okay? My first priority is your mental well-being, understood? What time did you arrive at the Green Tavern on the night of March 2nd? Were you alone, or were you with any friends prior to meeting the offender? Do you mind if I get contact information for your friend, Mark? Did you know any other people at the bar that night? Is there anyone you know personally who's been volatile towards you lately? Do you remember how you first came into contact with the offender? Do you remember any facial features of the offender? Anything specific about the offender, such as, you know, hair color or moles on the body? Do you recall anything the offender said to you before or after the assault? Do you ever think about, well, what the offender might be feeling, Mr. Ellis? Aren't you ashamed of yourself, Mr. Ellis? What are you going to do if the offender is someone you know? What are you going to say to the offender when you see them in court? Do you think everyone will look at you differently now? Do you have any clocks in your house, and how many clocks do you own? Have they ever all simultaneously stopped? Do you think you'll sleep okay in the coming decades? Do you think this is your fault, Mr. Ellis? You do, don't you, Mr. Ellis? What will Camilla think of you? How are you going to tell your children? Are you interested in assisted suicide as an option? Have you ever heard of the kamikaze birds of India, Mr. Ellis? Did you know that horned lizards can squirt blood out of their eyes? Do you intend to recover from this fully? Is there a word for what you're feeling? What would your father think of you if he were still alive? Are you going to cry? Do you believe in purgatory? Have you ever heard wolves howl in a place where wolves do not reside? Do you recall how many alcoholic drinks you had that evening? What force was threatened or used by the offender, if you know? Do you recall physically resisting at any time during the assault? Can you remember anything you said to the offender over the course of the night? What can you tell me about the chronology of sex acts that were performed? Did you perform any sex acts, including kissing, before the assault took place? Would you like to take a break, Mr. Ellis? Would you like some water? Would you like the number to a crisis center here in town? Would you like references for therapists who work with this kind of trauma? Let's pick this up once you're back home. Is that okay with you, Mr. Ellis?
Camilla rolls me in a wheelchair down a Listerine reeking hospital hallway towards the elevator. It's easier this way, they tell us. It will be painful for me to walk for a few weeks. I can't lift my eyes to meet those of the nurses, patients, or doctors as I go. I can feel them. I am a damaged relic leaving the museum for good. I stare at their shoes. Patent leather. Slip-ons. Wedges, I think they call them. Sneakers, even high heels. All those better, happier feet. What would you like for dinner, Dawn? Camilla asks. Light talk is as good as any other way to begin my death sentence. Steak? Lasagna? All food is a last meal. Fish? Everything leads to the execution. I'll have the fish, please. And Camilla, my dear, can we swing by the bar on the way home? I think I left my body there. The elevator doors open and a woman and her husband step out carrying flowers and balloons bearing the words, "Get well!" She stops at the sight of me, gasps, and halts her husband with a hand to his chest. "I'm sorry, are you Donald Ellis?" "No, ma'am, but I get that all the time. You must have mistaken me for a butcher's block. You must have mistaken me for a skinned deer. You must have mistaken me for some coward. Donald is no longer with us. Donald died reading a poem to a bullfighter. Donald was scratched to death by a peacock. Donald passed away trying to make love 200 meters under the ocean. Donald left this world chiseling turquoise out of rock with his bare hands. Donald's fingers bled to death. Donald swallowed 100 matches and rubbed his body against a volcano. He died instantly. Donald got into an argument with the moon and died instantly. Donald revealed how much he could love and died instantly. Donald met his friend for a beer after work and died instantly. Donald has to explain to his children what happened and will die instantly. Donald will touch his wife's thigh and die instantly. I just want to say, it's so awful what happened to you. You're all over the news, but just like know that everyone is on your side and sending you prayers. Donald dies instantly. I'm so sorry to ask, but would you mind if I got a selfie with you? 2. A man named Donald returns to a house with a wife after 7 days in a hospital. Donald carries a plastic bag filled with personal items given back to him after he was discharged. Donald enters a house where it said he's resided for over a decade. Donald finds the belongings and stranded activities of children scattered around the living room, as if they were kidnapped right in the middle of what they were doing. Donald has no recollection of the house. Donald has no recollection of its potted plants. Donald has no recollection of its smell. He sees framed photographs of children and a wife all over the living room. He sees a framed master's degree for a man named Donald. Perhaps Donald once dreamed of becoming a famous novelist or poet. Donald now dreams of nothing, for he is a no one. Donald sees a piece of bread dropped on the floor next to the kitchen table, sees that all the lights have been left on, sees paintbrushes sitting in a glass full of foggy paint water. The house looks more like a museum of a life than the longtime home of a man named Donald. Donald has no recollection of the man named Donald who he sees in a mirror. Donald has no recollection of the staircase in the house and where it leads. Donald has no recollection of breath. He takes a long time to ascend the stairs, counting each one as he goes. Donald has no recollection of what comes after 5. Donald seems to recall 7, but can't be sure. In a bedroom, Donald cannot identify personal items. Donald opens a sock drawer to find that it's actually a sweater drawer. He swears it's always been a sock drawer. He tries to sit on the bed in the bedroom, but it hurts to sit, so he just stands in the middle of the bedroom that belongs to a man named Donald. He sets the bag of personal items from the hospital on a nearby dresser and sees another framed photo of children. These must be the children of the man named Donald, and he's seen them all over the house. Donald notices a dark figure standing in the background of the photograph. Some creature with a wild, tangled mouth. Some ghost. Fear surges through Donald's body as he worries for the safety of the children in the photograph. Donald blinks and realizes it is just Donald in the photograph with the children, not a ghost. Donald takes the photograph out of the frame and looks closer to make sure. Yes. It's just a man. A creature still. He places the photograph on the carpeted floor of the bedroom. Donald takes a wallet out of the hospital bag and puts it in the medicine cabinet in the bathroom. Donald removes the jacket from the hospital bag and drops it out the second-story window. Donald takes out a watch and places it in the shower. Donald is settling in just fine. The hospital did not include Donald's personal clothing in the hospital bag. Perhaps because it is evidence now. Donald is evidence now. Donald retrieves the last of the items and places them on the floor with the photograph of the children and the creature. Donald enters the closet filled with the belongings of a man and begins pulling out all of his belts. There are many of them. Donald places the belts on the floor with the other items. A bed of snakes. They move. Donald quickly retrieves a lighter and lights the den of them on fire. Donald has no recollection of burning. Donald has no recollection of objects. Donald has no recollection of pain. Donald watches as the carpet around him begins to smolder. Soon, the carpet is also on fire. The smoke in the bedroom sets off a loud alarm and triggers a sprinkler system in the ceiling. Water rains from the stucco. Donald recalls a thunderstorm when he was a child that killed a local dog. Donald recalls leaning over a railing in the arms of his mother and running his young hand under a waterfall. Donald recalls learning how to swim. Donald recalls the dark woods, twigs piercing into his back under the pressure from above. Donald recalls the above. Donald drowns. The room burns as a woman screams a man's name from downstairs.
Donald, what's going on up there? Donald, what's going on? Donald? Donald? Donald?
I sit in front of my therapist, Irene, once a week. I do not talk. Or I talk about the news, the Olympics, the different kinds of charcoals one might use for barbecuing. I talk about landscaping, the sculptures of coons, the vegetables I'm pissed they were out of at the farmer's market. I do not talk. Or I talk about old wars, my daughter winning first place at the science fair, my son's slipping grades. I talk about the origin of toothpaste, which I've read has a Nazi connection. I talk about Rachmaninoff, my desire to go horseback riding someday, my disdain for the Green Party. I do not talk, or I talk about seeing the Hell's Angels come through town once. I talk about my desire to see the Grand Canyon. I talk about having no desire to see Mount Rushmore. I talk about Camilla's successful recent eye exam, the best ways to store fresh herbs in the fridge, the Mets, the new Chinese restaurant that opened up in town, the weather. I talk about the prose of Anne Carson, or the plays of Chekhov. I talk about spending my 20s aspiring to be a writer that was somehow a combination of the two. I talk about the new line of razors I've discovered, the different uses for valerian root, the stupid closure on the 20 that made us late for my follow-up doctor's appointment. I talk about Judge Judy, my new favorite TV show. I talk about physical therapy. I do not talk. I do not talk. Or I talk about the invention of the rocking chair, mutts versus purebreds, the health benefits of sunflower seeds, the new bristless broom I ordered off Amazon. I talk about the walking shoes I just purchased, the best brands of mosquito repellent, the time I was mutilated and left for dead in an alley, the time I went rafting with friends for my 46th birthday. I do not talk. 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 Or I talk about the effects of wind on different sizes of birds. I talk about taxidermy. I talk about golf. 3. Welcome back, Mr. Ellis. We missed you, reads one of the dozens of cards cluttering my classroom desk, where I haven't sat in over 4 weeks since what happened. Every condolence cake, every overstayed sympathy hug or half-assed buck-up buttercup smile is another reminder of how much I've disappeared. I'm disappearing. I shove the cards and a bouquet of flowers into my desk drawer. I move slower now. I have to. Walking is very hard for me. Some days the pain is so bad I can't sit either. I just have to stand wherever I am without moving. Amanda and Jake call it statue time. Standing alongside me in cafes or on a street corner, I tell them, Daddy is just thinking, he needs to stop to think. And they're happy to play this game with me. It's safer for their imaginations if they do. They still see how slowly I put on my shoes, how I'm careful when bending over, the measured unease of getting in and out of our car or climbing stairs in a building with no elevator. There's no game in that. I've arrived almost 2 hours before class so I can prepare. It is my new routine. Sometimes I'll arrive at an appointment 3 hours early just so I have time to stare out of my car window. I watch and try not to think. Everything is a film. A fly on the windshield trying to get in. A delivery truck parked in front of whatever to deliver something I will never savor. A plane carrying flesh messages across the sky. The movie is wonderful to watch when I'm not in it. The early arrival routine also allows for time to practice smiling in the rear view. I tilt it toward me until I can see only my mouth. At home, I do the same. When I get out of the shower and wipe the fog off the glass, I check the stubble on my chin, clean my ears, staring at the lobes, but I avoid my eyes. Always. I run my fingers through my wet hair and consider its line, receding like a riverbank in a drought. When my daughter Amanda calls me into her bedroom to ask which outfit she should wear to school, holding each pair of overalls up to her small chest, I look her in the eyes in the full-length mirror and tell her, I love the blue one with the sea otters on it. I am not afraid of my daughter's eyes. At the front door, I check my tie, my collar, the nick on my chin from my razor. I check my brows, even, and am able to wipe the crusts off my lids without looking directly into my own eyes. Every once in a while, though, it happens, and I'll catch them by sheer proximity. My pupils are stabbed into my head like black thumbtacks pinning my entire face in place. My eyes are no longer part of my body. We do not know each other. I see them, and they do not see me. The rear view in my car is the best mirror to practice my smiling because it's small. I can focus on the one part of my face I'm intending to and see nothing else. I start with one side of my mouth, lifting the invisible strings of my lips, then dropping them back into resting. I lift the other side, half smiling, and drop it back. Half smile. Rest. Half smile again. Rest. Then I lift both at the same time, slowly spreading the meat halfway across my face like a loving bow. The human smile no longer makes sense to me. Why is it a sign of happiness? Who decided that? Why not the crinkling of the nose, or blinking, or a hard swallow? Who invented the word smile and gave it its meaning? Smile is the shape of my mouth. Amanda wants to see when she comes running out of the science fair, pushing her lime-colored glasses up her nose and shrieking with good news. Smile is the shape of my mouth, my therapist looks for when she asks, how am I doing? It's the shape of my mouth Camilla wants to kiss when I return from a day's work. The shape of my mouth my neighbors and colleagues desire to set them at ease. It makes others feel safe with my story. I practice this smiling, this mouth shaping in the mirror. I do it for them. Morning, Donnie, my colleague Eugenia, a tenured eccentric boil of a woman, says, sticking her shriveled head in and rapping loudly on my door. She teaches math in the special ed department and eats mustard on bread, not toast, every day for lunch. Eugenia isn't known for her warmth, which garnered her the nickname Jeannie the Meanie from some of the first graders, and it caught on with some of the adult staff as well. Jeannie the Meanie wears patterned tights with Crocs and jean vests still pinned with buttons from the 60s. She always paints her nails a bright hooker red and wears no makeup. The faculty spends their lunch breaks gossiping about Eugenia over home-prepared salads with dressing on the side. I wave her in and put on the shape of my mouth I've been practicing. How you doing, son? She asks. her bangles clanging on her wrists as she drops a wrinkled paw on my shoulder. It's the most common question I'm asked, and I know everyone wants to hear only one answer. Good, I say. Bullshit. I look up from my desk. You're not good, Junior. But that's okay. You will be. You're a damn mess. I can see it on you. I play with my tie. Don't worry, son. No one else can see it. You're not good right now. But you will be. She pats me hard, her cigarette and Dijon breath crawling down my throat. Thanks, I say. Appreciate it. The bell rings. Genie the Meanie marches out. Hey, no running in the halls, you bunion! I've arrived an hour and 10 minutes early to Irene's office. I move the rear view. I practice the shape of my mouth. I take a deep breath and do my staring. I watch the movie play around me. I think about my students, today's class. Their easy eyes welcoming me back. The big meadows of their minds open. The grief loosens its jaw from my neck but doesn't let go. Jimmy Hillstein, a quiet redhead who lost his father in a trucking accident when he was 5, stayed seated in the back of the room. Jimmy developed a bad stutter over the year following his dad's death and soon stopped speaking altogether. Speech therapy helped him find his voice again, mostly through singing. In class, he would raise his hand and sing his answers to me. His brave alto would push out words to the tune of Yellow Submarine. It wasn't Columbus, but Leif Erikson, Leif Erikson. He sang a lot of answers in this tune, getting creative with syllables and consonants to make each one fit the melody. It wasn't just Jimmy's ability to bloom in the face of such pain that got to me, but also the tenderness of his fellow students. They never made fun of Jimmy's silence, or his stutter, or his singing answers, ever. I understand Jimmy's fragility. My father died in an accident when I was a teenager, though I dealt with my grief less quietly. We stared at each other from across the classroom. He got up and adjusted his shirt so his belly wouldn't peek out from underneath. He came to my desk and squinted. He handed me a note. How was your first day back, Donald? Irene asks after I do not talk. Yes, I am still breathing. No, I am not living. Yes, I can feel my legs. I've been putting on a good face, Irene. Each day grows towards its death. I try to forget. Forgive every day I die. Again, my family lives a life of burial. Everything makes me want to cry. Everything makes me angry. Everything makes me numb. Repeat, I'm tired, paranoid. I'm cold most of the time, wearing full sweaters in the hot spring. Now I cannot feel my genitals. I had to relearn how to go to the bathroom. I'm still wearing a catheter. I can't make love to my wife. I fake it with my children. There is no difference between meanings anymore. A cereal bowl is a pillow, is a trash bin is a knife, is a fistfight on the street. Yes, I can see. I can't stop thinking about what I could have done to stop it that night. I'm listening. I went into the bar to meet my friend Mark for some drinks. It was a Wednesday. He left early to meet his wife for dinner. I struck up a conversation with someone. They say I left the bar alone. They say someone entering the bar saw me and said I looked disoriented. Someone, the offender, was outside. Maybe they had been inside watching me. I felt dizzy. I needed to sit down. The offender took me out into the woods. I ended up in the grass, under the trees. No one knows how I got there. They said my pants were taken off. I was barely conscious at that point. Sedated. I couldn't stop the... I couldn't do anything. No, I don't want to look. My arms were held down. I was too weak to struggle, my legs pinned. Barely conscious, the offender rubbed back and forth on top of me with clothes still on, with thick, rough jeans. The offender rubbed against me until there's nothing left of me. Till every part of me below is destroyed. Yes, I'm still breathing. I was dragged back to the Green Tavern and left there in the freezing cold, behind the building, next to the trash, without my clothes on, covered in blood. The offender, no, I am not living. A long silence. I can no longer speak. A demon reaches into my mouth and rips out all the bells. Sobered, angry, wordless, impossible to explain. Explosive remorse hung humiliated into morbidity. My life. My life. Smeared across the wall like feces in a ward. I weep. Wipe snot and tears from my face and grind my knuckles deep into the suede of Irene's couch. Sweat forming, my ass levitating off the cushions with a pulsing shame. I want to smash my many hearts against a spike. I want to run. I give in. Give in to my skeletal now, my peachless unease, the offender. I call my attacker. Ashamed, I cry so hard. I have to adjust the tube connected to my urine bag so as not to pinch it. I lean forward and hold one hand on the tube and the other hand over my face. This face I used to own. Clawing a boy's breaking. My entire body trembling in its 0-foot life sentence cell. May I sit next to you, Donald? Yes. Dear Mr. Ellis, today my mom made me pancakes because it is a special day, because you are my favorite teacher, and you are back, and that makes me happy. My mom made one of the pancakes in the shape of an E for Ellis. If you ever want to talk to me about what happened and why you had to go away, Mr. Ellis, I will listen and I will be your friend. My best friend is Roddy, my dog, and he always listens to me whenever I am sad. I can be your Roddy if you need one. My mom says a bad thing was done to you by a bad person they can't find, and it was on the news. But I don't care about the news. I only care about you. Your friend, Jimmy. P.S. I also care about Roddy, too, and Mom. Jake's hunched over a painting on the front porch, surrounded by a clutter of pastels when I pull into the driveway. I was planning on sitting in the car for a while to shake off the session with Irene, but the sight of my son softens me. He is markedly different from his older sister, the science lover, with social magnetism and flair for fluorescent fashion. His sister will one day be working on launch pads for NASA and marry some Pulitzer Prize winner. Jake is my introspective artist, my quiet landscape navigator, my insect whisperer. Hey, you. Hey, Dad. What are you working on there? Just a drawing. Oh, nice. Of what? Just a thing. I nod, rest my chin on my hand, my elbow on the car window frame. Jake rubs his nose, speaks without looking up from his painting. What are you working on in there? Just sitting in the car, monkey. Nothing special. Oh, Want to go for a drive? Do you want to go down to the river?
Sure.
How was school today?
I don't know. Kind of fun, I guess.
Oh, yeah? Tell me.
Well, I found a salamander at lunch.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And it felt funny in my hands, the skin. But I petted it right there, between the eyes, you know, like a cat.
Yeah.
And it fell asleep in my hand. That was kind of cool.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. How long did it sleep for?
Long enough that I could kind of sketch it a little.
Oh, yeah? Is that what you were working on at the house?
No, that was this other thing.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Buddy, take off your sandals if you're going to put your feet on the dash.
Sorry.
Okay.
Don't be sorry, monkey.
There should be parking coming up.
Okay.
So,
yeah, monkey.
Do you feel funny since you got home?
What do you mean?
You're just sort of quiet, I guess. I don't know.
I don't know.
It won't be like this for long, I promise.
Okay.
Is there anything else you want to ask me, monkey?
I don't know.
Have people been saying things to you at school? Jake, listen to me. Don't cry. Monkey, don't cry. Listen, I'm here, aren't I? I'm alive and fine and here. I know, it just...
What you can tell me.
I don't know. Okay, you don't have to share anything if you don't want to, but no, I'm fine. Really, I am. I'm here, okay? I'm here. It's just some people called you bad names that I didn't like and asked me how you
Could what, monkey?
Could get raped. And I don't even know what that word was. I had to look it up. It sounds so bad. Is that what happened to you?
It's complicated, Jake. It's really complicated. But
let me try and explain it to you. Some people in the world are bad people. What happened to me... I was kind of like that salamander, asleep for what happened to me.
But why were you sleeping?
Well, one of the bad things that happened was someone put something in my drink and made me very, very sleepy. So it didn't hurt me. I couldn't feel anything.
Why did you let someone put something in your drink?
I didn't let it happen, Jake. It was put in my drink when I wasn't looking.
Oh. But why weren't you looking, Dad?
Jake, buddy, listen to me. What matters is I'm fine now, and they're going to find that bad person so they can't do bad things to other people. Do you believe me?
Yeah.
Okay, kiddo. Let's get out of here.
Sit by the water. Sound good?
Yeah, okay. We sit hip to hip overlooking Black River Bay. I put my hand around his narrow shoulders and hold him close. I'd grow extra mouths to swallow all his confusion and sorrow. We say nothing. The clouds move the wind. Flirt the trees, gust the water, caress the fish, tickle the reeds, polish the stones, suckle the moss, gurgle the river, choir the valley. Somewhere, a salamander sleeps. Somewhere, an owl opens one eye. Somewhere, a bad thing. Somewhere, a good thing. No thing. And everything. The air cracks its warm clarity against our hair. The smell of grilling meat wafts by us. I love him. I will protect him. Yes, I'm still breathing. No, I am not living. 4. I lock the door behind me. It's easier to get ready for bed when I'm in the bathroom alone. I lower the lights until I can barely see. I undo my buckle and unzip my pants. I hate the sound of a zipper's descent. I carefully pull the waistband of my slacks down over my hips while also bellowing the fabric, slowly pulling like a flag to half-mast and making sure nothing snags the bag of piss clinging to my thigh. I step out of the puddle of fabric on the floor, one leg at a time, mindful not to pull my wrapped leg up too high and pinch the catheter. Naked, I unvelcro the bag from my leg and disconnect it from its tube. I prop it up on a towel next to the sink. I wash my hands for 15 seconds with soap. I remove the bag's drain spout from its sleeve and open it. I spread my legs and stand over the toilet. I hold its head, now a Picasso of pigment, and lean its misshapen body over the bowl with one hand. With my other hand, I pick up the bag of urine. I look up at a shelf filled with Camilla's eye creams. Honey, why did you marry me? I do not look down as I turn the urine bag upside down into the toilet bowl and enjoy the familiar trickle against the porcelain. I close my eyes. I remember. I imagine. I am holding a perfect lever, a skin-sheathed cleaver, a velvet coffer. I am holding a bag of 100 warm nickels, the steeple on a sun-soaked sandcastle. I am holding a newborn baby eagle, a portrait of Poseidon on an easel, a hawk moth larva, a miniature statue of the Dalai Lama. I'm holding Mr. Potato Head, Van Gogh's big, beautiful ear, a gourd, a gun. I'm holding a fresh-cut cow's tongue. I'm holding a mountain with a lenticular cloud, a swarm of sleeping starlings before dusk, a tarantula's cocoon, an inverted maelstrom, a titan arum blossom. I am holding a throbbing tornado, a monarch's libido, a calcified bird from Lake Natron, the horn of a Watusi bull, a king's skull, a shard from a broken crystal ball, a famous scroll. I'm holding timber from the Black Forest. I'm holding a whale's vein. I'm holding my father's hand. I'm holding my father's name. In the morning, the air is thick with the smell of cooked onion and coffee. Someone has slid a piece of paper underneath the bedroom door. A painting. Jake's. In the painting, a man and a boy sit on a dock overlooking a river and a forest. The sun shines brightly from above, illuminating each leaf in shades of green, yellow, and gold. The man wears a crown. He does not smile, but his body does. The man isn't holding the boy with his arms, but with wings, long and strong. The boy's eyes are closed. He does not see, but his body does. Beyond them, a thick curtain of green trees is drawn. Between the parted woods, a small pair of black eyes peer out, and a misshapen, scribbled hand claws at the bark, its other arm long, dragging in the mud. The creature is headless. It moves. Downstairs, I find Camilla frozen in the kitchen, staring at the television as onions burn on the stove. Authorities are confirming that a man identified as Pear O'Sullivan has been brutally attacked and assaulted in Springfield, Massachusetts. It moves. It.
Investigators believe the perpetrator is likely the same person who attacked Watertown schoolteacher Donald Ellis just 3 months ago, a perpetrator who authorities now believe is an unidentified woman. She.
Part 2. 1. You are now chatting with Jasmine Rose. Jamarvelous 83. Yo, Jasmine Rose. Hey there. Jamar here. Is yours Jasmine or Rose? Or both? Jasmine, though some people call me Rose too. Where are you from, Jamar? I like that pic of you. The profile one.